92.3 Inspiration FM, Nigeria's number one family radio station.
Hey Oscar,
he's right here on 92.3 Inspiration FM.
Down to 2.3 Inspiration FM. Good afternoon to you out there. How y'all doing on a wonderful Saturday afternoon? It's 2:04 p.m. and welcome to the last of the series of Under the Sun. Now, for those who just tuned in, you might have been left out. But for those who know, Under the Sun was a series that ran for about 8 to 9 weeks right here on Inspiration FM every Saturday, brought to you by the British Council. And it's a selection of stories written from different Nigerians, for Nigerians, by Nigerians, and we featured a story each week. Now, what I'm about to play you are the last set of stories for the Under the Sun series. Now, these stories are winning entries from schools who wrote in for a radio competition that was launched in 28 secondary schools in Kano and Lagos June this year, following a step-down workshop on creative writing for radio organized by teachers in various schools. Who had attended the same workshop organized by the British Council and facilitated by Dr. Graham Mort. He's a UK consultant on creative writing from Lancaster University, UK. Now, I'm going to play you three stories back to back for the next couple of minutes, about 30 minutes. And story one is The Triumph of Justice by Chioma Okafor Grace. That's her name, Chioma Okafor Grace, from St. Louis Secondary School. Bompai Kano, hope I got that right. Story two is Painful Exchange by Nkiruka Anyao from Rogers Foundation College, Kano. And the last story is from Ni Adenuga, titled Days of the Black Sun, from British International School, Lagos. I'm going to tell you more about these stories after we play them, but I'm going to hit you with these stories back to back, and you're going to get your chance to call in and just drop one or two comments as to what you think. So first up is The Triumph of Justice by Chioma Okafor from Grace, from St. Louis Secondary School, Bompai, Kano. Enjoy these stories.
Radiophonics, The Triumph of Justice.
Have you anything to say for yourself why the court should not judge you according to the law? The court registrar asked. How could this be the law? Was this the law Moses of old meant? No, this cannot be. Aldo remembered he'd been asked to say something. What could a 17-year-old boy say at this point? God is my witness that I did not murder Sheikh Yusuf Usman. Aud pleaded. Aud Sabu, you've been given a fair trial and found guilty. Having examined the mass of evidence I have before me, I have no hesitation in concluding that you have been properly convicted. Sheikh Yusuf Usman was a very wealthy man with large hectares of land. He built his mighty mansions on some, and the rest he used for the cultivation of groundnut and cotton. He had 15 wells, but unluckily where he dug there was little water. During the dry season, the wells dried up, only springing forth at the visit of the first rain. Rano Town had good fertile soils, good for groundnut and cotton cultivation, and being located in the northern part of Nigeria, had a longer period of dry season. His subjects established a saying, as dry as Yusuf's wells. Many people had no privilege to own wells, but the few who had were not as unlucky as Sheikh Yusuf. They dug wells with ever-flowing waters. Among these few was Malam Gobir Sabu. Gobir dug 3 wells beside one of Yusuf's farms. These aroused a deep jealousy in Yusuf, so that they never saw eye to eye. Days passed. Months passed, years passed, But the day willed by God to rupture the thread-like cord that binds man and his creator, the day when man shall see his endless eternity, must surely come, the day when the die is cast. On that day, I would stroll to his father's wells to drink from the labor of his father. Then came the sheikh from behind him. Son of my enemy, go back to your poverty-stricken family and drink from the wrinkled palm of your sick mother. Whose well is it? I would ask, not turning back to see the evil face of this incorrigible man. What sort of question is this? I would continue drinking the water when suddenly an arrow was shot at him. Without delay, I would bend down, and the arrow thudded right into the sheikh's heart. After much struggle by his men to save him, he closed his eyes in death. The judge, who had been bribed to his face, now shamelessly referred to a mass of evidence. What evidence had he? No doubt the mass of evidence was the bags of coins he had been given. I cannot be too drastic in an offense of this nature. I should be failing in my duty to the public if I give you the option of a fine or a prison sentence. So, having found you guilty of murdering the sheikh, you are hereby sentenced to death by hanging. Court! The court clerk shouted, and Audu's world came crashing before his very eyes. Audu was led away from the dock by the policemen while his relatives wailed and dashed themselves to the ground. The scene at the court was one to behold. In the town of Ranu, there lived an upright man, very trustworthy, full of principle. He had a reputable character and was highly favored. Due to his ethical character, he was made to govern the prison and he was also the executioner. His name was Malam Zongo. As Audu was led to the gallows, he said his final prayers. May the Lord have mercy on my soul, and may justice prevail against injustice. When he was about to be hanged, Malam Zongo said, young boy, your case is a very critical one. Why did your patience cease? My son, you go to meet your creator. What shall you say to him? And at this point, Malam Zongo looked into Audu's eyes and recognized him. Are you Audu, the only son of late Malam Gobrisabo? Yes, Malam, I am, replied Audu. Malam Zongo refused to take further actions. I will not hang you. Go back to police custody, for I will testify as a witness in court. Sorrows and tears may last for the night, but true joy comes in the morning. There was clamor, heated discussion, and last-minute consultations going on in the court when the judge entered. Order! Court! The court clerk bellowed while everybody rose up until the judge took his seat. Two policemen led the accused into the dock and then stood on either side of him as if he would escape. This time around, there was the counsel for the defense, Barrister Sani Aruga, a close friend of Malam Zongo. The first son of the sheikh, Barrister Mahmoud Usman, served as the counsel for the prosecution. Justice Mandori was ill, so a new judge acted on his behalf. The new judge was Justice Tony Effiong. The witness on Audu's side was Malam Zongo.
It would be useless observing all protocols since everyone knows the reason for this gathering.
The court registrar announced.
Counsel for the defense, state why the accused is guilty.
Barrister Mahmoud, a slender, handsome young man in a white wig, stood up. My lord, members of the jury, my father's guards are not children. They said that Audi came with his friends to drink, boasting of his father's wealth. When they were confronted, they found the arrow on the ground, took it and shot at the sheikh. The guards at this time were working on the farm. Those guards returned and saw their master in a pool of blood. Audu and his friends had almost escaped, but were caught by the guards. These are the facts of the sheikh's death. If it pleases your lordship, call the guards, asked Barrister Sani Aruga, a tall elderly man wearing a worn-out wig. The guards appeared. One of them volunteered to represent all and so went into the witness box. Take the Quran in your right hand and repeat after me. I swear by Almighty Allah that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. The guard swore as he had been told. Why did you have to leave your master? Aren't you supposed to follow him to every nook and cranny he goes? Barrister Sani asked. Yes, he told us to go and assist the farmhands because there was much work to be done. But at least even one could have stayed with him, Barrister Sani said. He told us all to go because he least expected anything could happen. So by that he took a risk, said Barrister Sani. The guard looked unsure and answered, Yes, sir, you can go. Sani Aruga gave his own facts of the case. My lord, members of the jury, this is a complete fabrication. Let us examine the evidence of the prosecution itself. What a bundle of contradictions. Are guards meant to work on the land? The late Sheikh had hundreds of workers. How is it that five guards should go and assist? What difference will it make? I call the defense witness, Malam Zongu. After the swearing process, Barrister Sani questioned Malam Zongu. As a public prison officer, what were you doing in some hideouts near the scene of the death? Sani asked. My house is a few meters away from the wells, and one of my windows faced the well in the opposite direction, so I saw the scene from my window. What actually happened? The arrow was shot by the guards at Audu, but Audu bent down immediately, and the arrow went to the target destined by God. What other evidence does the court need? Audu is either seen looking after his mother or studying holy books. What offense has a boy committed to go drink from his father's wells, which are now his own? I was about to hang him when I recognized him. I cannot partake in injustice. I would like to go to my creator with clean hands.
Members of the jury, are you agreed on your verdict?
The registrar asked. We are agreed, the foreman of the jury replied.
Is it guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty. Audu's broken world began taking a new form. In this world, justice prevailed against injustice. His daydreams were interrupted by the judge's voice.
Audu Sabo, you have been given a fair trial and found not guilty. I, on behalf of Justice Mandori, apologize for wrong judgment in the first place. I promise that he will be properly dealt with because an innocent soul would have been lost if not for the help of our veracious father, Malam Zango.
Court dismissed, the clerk ordered, and the joy of justice was written all over the face of everyone present.
Now to 2.3 Inspiration FM, still under the sun. And that was our first story, The Triumph of Justice, written by Chioma Okafor Grace from St. Louis Secondary School, Bompaikano. And that basically was talking about the wealth and, the wealthy thinking he had the power to, overturn everything he had. But he later realized that it's not about the power. And he discovered that his power is limited. And since money is power, the truth is, can the truth really oppose wealth? Well, there you had it, that the justice and, justice was served in the end. Story two coming up is titled Painful Exchange by Nkiruka Anyanwu from Rogers Foundation College, Kano.
Radio Phonics, Painful Exchange.
Ama, where are you? Remember Mama said for us to stay together. Ama! Ego's voice echoed out to me, urging me to come out from the bush. I was searching for what only God knows. All of a sudden, I turned and saw something. Ego, come and see what I have found. A fruit. She walked up to me. The cylindrical, deep green fruit shone in my hand. It's so beautiful. We will have to show it to Mama. Come, Let's go or Mama will be so worried about us. That was a dream I had a very long time ago. But I still remember it like it happened only yesterday. I had told it to Mama, who said with her insight into dreams that I was going to have a child. Useless, shameless woman. I think I have been patient enough. Stupid barren witch. You want me to die without having seen my grandchildren, eh? I have told my son to marry another wife. I don't know the type of charm you have used to hold him, but wait and see. I will break it. That explains what I have been passing through for all the years that I have been married to Uzo. My mother-in-law, Ojugo, never makes me feel welcome. She keeps repeating the insults. Her words cut into my heart like knives. Uzo, though, comforts me daily. I'm tired of all this. Why can't I just have a child? Why are the gods so heartless? Everywhere I turned, people whispered and pointed in my direction. Shh, quiet woman, and stop accusing the gods. They will bless you with a child at the right time, he said to me on a particular day. I felt I never deserved a man like Uzo, caring, loving, and hardworking. When I considered my childlessness, I felt unworthy of him. Oh, Uzo, why did you marry me? No, I must give him a child. He does not deserve to be punished. The day before I planned to go to Alaku to beg Nwa, the god of fertility, to bless me with a child, Uzo came back from the farm earlier than before. I was sleeping when he came back. To my greatest surprise, someone had cooked that afternoon, and then he came into the hut quietly. He held me and I stood up. I asked if he had been in the house for long and apologized for having slept so much. You deserve it, he said and continued. Have you eaten? You look pale. Is anything the matter? No, I am all right. What food are you talking about? Did Mama cook before she left? I dare not touch the pot. I cooked, he said. I just sat there not knowing what to say. I knew he could cook as he had told me how he used to help his mother cook as an only child. Here was another problem for me. What if one of the village gossips saw him cook for me? Would they not say I not only charmed him into not marrying another woman, I also made him cook for me? Wouldn't they say I have turned him into my servant, second wife? I know my mother-in-law has thought about it. I don't know if she has already made preparations. I really needed a child. I contemplated. I will definitely go to Alaku, but alone, and I will not tell anyone, not even Ego. She already had 4 boys. Whenever I saw them, I felt cursed by Umwa. That night, I told Uzo that I wanted to go to my maternal village to visit one of my aunts. My mother-in-law looked at me suspiciously when I left in the morning. She looked at me as if she had something in mind. I feared she was going to bring in another wife. Oh, what if I found another woman in the house on my return? Uzo cannot do this to me. I must go to Alaku, I resolved, and beg to have a child. Any type of child. Maimed, dumb, or blind, let the village know that I was not a dry tree. A voice said, my daughter, go back home. I shuffled forward, causing a stir in the bushes as I passed the forest. I felt trailed. It took me a day to find Alaku, and with the help of others, I found the Dibia huddled in his shrine, close to the river Mmemme. The Dibia reminded me of the dream I had as a child and advised me to be patient. No, patience, not again. When my house is on fire, whatever the cost, I wanted a child now, I told him. If it will just appear now, I will take it along. Remember, my daughter, a patient dog will eat the fattest bone. Patience is what you need. I wasn't going to listen, so he told me to go to the river. River Mmemme wavered and emitted steam, steam that signified ascending sacrifices. The priestess Ezenwanyi was a tall, fair woman. She looked like she lived in the water and had a veil over her face. Her unusually dark cave had cowries, shells, hides, and fetishes hung everywhere. She told me she knew my mission and that I was being impatient. I told her that my husband needed a child, my mother-in-law needed a child, and that the whole village thought me to be barren. Hot tears dropped on my breast. I asked what I could do to have a child. I was to sacrifice a spotless white female goat and something very precious to me. She never stated what this was to be. At the door, she said, "Remember, it takes a life to make a life." Uttered a guttural laugh and disappeared. This was a statement I could not understand at that moment. I ran to the village Eke market for the goat, which I took to Ezinwanyi. The goat did a show of resistance as I dragged. It screamed its guts out, but it moved. She understood my need for a child and pitied me. She made some incantations over the goat and threw it into the river. It flung itself desperately, bleated profusely, and with breathless kicking of hoofs went underwater. For the first time, I saw her face, which was covered with long hair, the pointed nose and the gap teeth. I felt she was more attractive than I was, in spite of the fact that I was considered the village beauty. According to legend, she was born in the river and dedicated to the river. After the ritual, I went back home a fulfilled woman. I felt I was already pregnant, for this goddess hardly failed. I had a meal waiting for Uzo before he arrived from the farm. When he arrived, he saw I was joyous and complimented me. 3 months later, I was a rounded body. I was so happy and yet did not tell my husband. It was Ojugo that noticed it one day when she saw me vomiting. She had seen a similar thing the previous day and understood the way women understand themselves. She came closer out of curiosity. "You must be pregnant, Ama. Why did you not tell me?" She embraced me and took me to her hut. This was only the second time in 7 years that I would enter her house. She gave me a sour, bitter-tasting concoction and some food to take. I slept afterwards. She must have told Uzor about it, for when I woke up, he was there by my side, beaming with satisfaction. Her treatment of me made me feel I had a mother, but this feeling did not last. One night in the 9th month of my pregnancy, Uzo announced that he was going hunting for game. The same night, I was caught in the pangs of childbirth. "Mama, oh!" I remember the dream now, vaguely as I pushed. Then she came out like fluid. "A girl," called one of the women. "You are now a woman," someone was saying, as I caught the frenzy of having become a mother. I had joined the league. I felt my mission on earth had been accomplished and was ready to die. On the other hand, Ojugo was saying how lucky she was to have a grandchild. In the morning, a crowd gathered in the compound, but it was not to celebrate. What was there to celebrate? My husband had not come back from his hunting. The lifeless body, a pale face, the rest of him hung limply on 2 shoulders. That was when I fainted. So Uzo was the sacrificial lamb after all. "We found his body in the forest and Eke, the python, close by," the carrier said. A python was the sacred messenger of the gods, the messenger of death itself. It takes a life to make a life. I remembered Ezinwanyi's words. "But if only the gods could take this child away now and give me back my Uzo." It was too late. "My love, I wish the gods allowed you to see our daughter, even if for only 1 second. This is the guilt I have had to live with. This is the guilt that is killing me. The only joy is this growing daughter, who, though a pearl, compares poorly to my Uzo."
All right, 92.3 Inspiration FM, second story from Under the Sun, and that one was titled Painful Exchange by Nkiruka Anyang from Rogers Foundation College. And, well, 2 stories down, 1 more to go. The last story is Days of the Black Sun by Ni Adenuga from the British International School. Just want to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this commercial break. It's still 92.3 Inspiration FM, and we will be welcoming two or three of your calls to get your views on the stories you've heard so far. And if you just tuned in, welcome to the last in the series of Under the Sun. And what you have been hearing are winners from secondary schools in Kano and Lagos. About 28 secondary schools entered the competition, and we've played two of them so far. One from St. Louis Secondary School, Bompai, Kano, and the one you just heard from Rochester Foundation College, Kano. And our last one is still coming up. We'll be right back after this. It's still Under the Sun. Now, we have played two stories written by students from schools in Kano and Lagos, specifically The Triumph of Justice by Chioma Okafor Grace from St. Louis Secondary School, Bompai, Kano. And that was the first story we played. The second one, Painful Exchange by Nkiruka Anyao from Rochester Foundation College, Kano. The last story from the series, Under the Sun, is titled Days of the Black Sun by Ni Adenuga from British International School, Lagos. And like I mentioned earlier on, the number to call 2773923 or 2772923. Just put down your comments, all your views, all your opinions, and I'll be taking your call right after this last story. Here it is, Days of the Black Sun by Ni Adenuga.
Radiophonics, Days of the Black Sun.
The heat gnawed at us. A thin coat of sweat trickled down my face. The low skies bled out a bulbous structure as we all gazed in anticipation of the arrival of the comet. A ball. A ball. Our only prized possession that promised a way out of war-torn Rwanda. Our only chance to play the game toe-to-toe, foot-to-foot, brain-to-brain with the Hutus. The ball. Hope. Two intertwined. I looked to see Sebahive, an opponent from the other team. His body danced with the ball, leaving most players on my side in awe. No reaction. Just like how we let the Hutus destroy us, no reaction. Habibana, do something, Gahiji pleaded. He was one of my closest friends, a sponge for my emotions. My head snapped back into position as I was called. Hope. There was a sudden surge coursing through my veins. I was a one-man army versus a stampede. I threw myself in front of the ball as I feigned a tackle. He recovered. 1 second. Think. I lunged with my 2 feet at the ball. I whipped up a sandstorm and the sand cascaded into my eyes. The ball was gone. Sebaire! Loud cheers. He leaned forward, then kicked the ball. The inevitable demise. You see, Habimana, your little gang of rookies can't touch us. We, the huge sharks, run this village. Habimana, you are a loser. Do not lie to yourself. Dismissed. Sebahive's voice, pure malice. No, I wouldn't take that. Not after years of hard work. My nose sticking into book after book. No, I was going to be the best medical doctor in Rwanda. No, Sebahive. In me is the best medical doctor Rwanda has ever produced. I flashed a set of white teeth. Good luck with that. It will never happen. Don't you know what's going on? He read the blank expression on my face. Oh, maybe your papa, our chief, didn't want you to know. His whole gang jeered. Hot lava bubbled inside me. Sometimes, when I look at this day at the pitch, it was really an eye-opener. Shards of hope were as scarce as a miracle there. When I reminisce, throwing my mind back 5 years to the football pitch, this was the least the Hutus could do to us. The worst was yet to come. Habimana, where have you been? It's no longer safe. I'm disappointed you came so late. I will not take this. It is just irresponsible. From today onwards, you will not leave the huts without my consent. Rwanda is not safe. Papa's words were thin and razor sharp. There was a momentary pause. I wasn't sad. I loved Papa for this, always looking out for me. Mama shot Papa a glance. Papa, I will heed your advice, but I will also like to know what is going on. Mama still hadn't released her gaze. Papa broke the silence. Habimana. My name hung in the air. There was a ripple through the huts. What was going on? Pandemonium reigned. People ran out of huts, licked by fire. Straw roofs ignited. Heat embraced me. People wailed. Children like me, then 11 years, were running. Human torches. Father, do something. You are the chief. My voice was frantic. His eyes were pale green. I'd never seen him scared. His mouth curved around one word. Hutus. I gasped. Tears flushed Mama's face. Her soft eyes and beautiful caramel skin were pale. Another cry hit the air. What were the Hutus doing? I couldn't take any more. I pulled my lab coat off the mahogany stool and ran forward toward the nearest hut. I gasped. A thick blade was pumping furiously, up, swiftly and viciously, and down, sharp and vigorous. Death stank in the air. Dingisayo! A herd of villagers began running, stampede, sands lashing everywhere. A string of them was lined up outside our hut. I remember thinking, why would the Hutus invade us? I thought we shared power. Us, Tutsi, Hutu, and Twa. Voices called out from nowhere. It even seemed as if their cries were cloaked by the night. Cockroaches scurry to hide when they see their superiors. Bow for us, Tutsi, they jested. Cockroaches, they hissed. A bullet whizzed through the air and missed me by inches. But we were not all lucky. The bullet had landed squarely in the frail man's chest. He let out a squeal, then died. Papa turned to me, his eyes narrow and grave. Leave now. Run away to a church or a school. You will be safe there. Don't trust anyone. Life isn't fair. I love you. Tears streamed down my father's face. Mama turned to me. She stroked my cheeks. Shockwaves triggered tears as my vision suddenly became blurred. This isn't goodbye. You will see my son. It is not right for a mother to leave her son, but I love you. Never forget that. Go, Papa urged. I ran towards the bush and I hid for what seemed to be an eternity. I had a plain, full view of the village. The Hutus had revealed themselves. The machete commenced their butchering. I saw death. Death saw me. We stared eyeball to eyeball. My people. Mother, was she safe? A woman who carried me for 9 months, who had felt every ache in my body as her own. Time froze. I felt my face contort. Anger mixed with grief paralyzed me. There was nothing for me to do. At that point, I heard a faint cry. My mother's cry. I ran to the hut. Mama! Don't move, cockroach! The Hutu soldier shouted as he turned to me. His left hand tapped a semi-automatic tucked in the back of his trouser. Mama! I ran forward, trying to pull the man off her. Mother! I love you, Habimana. She spat out blood. Blood ran down Mama's body. She was dying. She released a smile, and I knew what she meant. I grabbed the semi-automatic tucked behind his back. His back arced as he swung the machete at me. The gun felt hot in my hands. I had never killed a man before. It would just make me like them. He swung it again, and I fired. I saw his body go limp as he crashed into the ground. His dark eyes rolled back. I threw the gun away. Mama! She replied with a deafening silence. The tears flowed faster. I ran for what was left of my life. Hours ago, I had parents. In seconds, I had lost everything. What had happened suddenly hit me. I was alone in the world, the real world. My mind was scarred. Images flickered in my head. Mother, father, the village, the gun, the man I had killed. White hot lava ran through me. I threw my body against the sand. Revenge, revenge. But revenge would make me just like them. I walked aimlessly in the fierce heat for what seemed like days. Then something caught my eye. A road. I pressed forward, mustering all the energy I could. There was a roadblock. Lights. I moved closer. My heart found its place in my throat. Dead bodies were piled up, one after the other. My eyes widened. My nose flared. Tutsi bodies. There was no more they could do to me. My life had no meaning. We were fighting a one-sided war. Hutu versus Tutsi. Rather, Hutus versus cockroaches. Indeed, that was what we were, with no means of resistance. We begged to be trampled on. What war was this? I wasn't fast enough, and the explosion threw me. I staggered to my feet. A jolt of pain stabbed me. The bullet hit its mark. Darkness. Then sirens filled the air. I opened my eyes. A white fluorescent light shone brightly. A man perched over me. He was white and in army uniform. I jumped. He smiled cheerfully. You are safe. Is it over? No, son, but there is hope. He touched my bandaged arm where the bullet had grazed me. The low skies bled out a bulbous sun. We all gazed in anticipation of the arrival of the comet. A ball. A ball. Our only prized possession that promised a way out of war-torn Rwanda. Our only chance to play the game toe-to-toe, foot-to-foot, brain-to-brain with the Hutus. The ball. Hope. Two intertwined.
Radiophonics is a Flint Studios production for the British Council.
And there we have it, ladies and gentlemen, the last of the stories. It's that one was titled Days of the Black Sun, written by Ni Adenuga from British International School, Lagos. And that was set in Rwanda, a boy named Habimana witnessing the death of both parents, of his parents, in the Rwanda genocide, basically between the Tutsis and the Hutus, and how more or less turned from a boy to a man instantly, realizing that he's all alone in the world. But enough talk from me. What do you have to say out there? The numbers to call, 2773-923-2923. The numbers to call. We've had three stories written by three students from secondary schools in Nigeria. The first one, Triumph of Justice, by Chioma Okafor Grace from St. Louis Secondary School, Bompai Kano. The second one, Painful Exchange, by Nkiruka Anyanwu from Rochester Foundation College, Kano. And the last one you just heard, written by Ni Adenuga, from the British International School. That one was titled Days of the Black Sun. Let's take our first caller. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Okay, how are you?
I'm fine.
All right, what's your name?
My name is Godswill.
Godswill?
Yeah.
Okay, how are you doing? So what do you have to say about the stories you just heard?
Okay, I listened to the three stories, but I also comment on the first story.
That's The Triumph of Justice?
Yeah, by Chioma.
Chioma Okafor. Go right ahead.
Okay, the comment I want to make is, you know, from the story, it pays to be prayerful, and it also pays to be patient and wait for justice. Sometimes the justice might not be met the way it should be, but when we pray and hope for the best, we'll discover that the right justice will come, even before any eventuality.
Okay. All right. And that is basically the lesson you took from that particular story.
Yeah.
And what about the remaining two stories? Do you have any other things to say? Painful Exchange?
For the second story, you know, if you are patient enough to wait for your time, you will miss it. No, the lady wasn't patient enough. And that's why she missed it all. If she has been patient enough, she will give deaf ears to all the people and the mother, the father. Okay, the in-laws, and all that.
Okay.
So it pays to be patient, and that's the lesson there.
Okay, thank you very much, God's will.
Yeah, I'm first caller. It's my first time caller.
Welcome to the show then. Welcome to the show.
All right, thank you. You're doing a good job.
God bless you too. Thank you very much. 277-3923, 277-2923 is the number to call. And hello.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's the name, sir?
My name is Ajula
Anthony. Your name is?
Ajula Anthony.
Anthony.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony, what are your comments or views or contribution?
Yeah, I want to say the stories are very, very interesting. And coming from secondary school students, I think there's a future for this country. Particularly, the first two stories are interesting, but the one that really caught my attention was the third story by Adenuga. Adenuga, yeah, the Death of the Black Son. It was a very interesting story. Of course, it was basically taken from fact that happened, but for a secondary school student to be able to dig that deep and make a story out of a real life story, a real life issue like that is encouraging. So I think they are very good stories. And I want to encourage them. I see that guy being one of the Wole Soyinkas of the future.
We all pray so. Thank you very much, Anthony.
Welcome,
thank you for calling in. Unless if we can just take one more call before we call it a day. The number 277-3923, 277-2923. And what we just heard are comments by listeners out there on the last of the stories from the Under the Sun series brought to you by British Council. And it's been quite interesting and educative and fun all the way. About 9 weeks, stories written from Nigerians all over the country. And these last three you just heard were written by students from schools in Kano and Lagos. And it just goes to show you how creative the students are in our present time.
Hello,
hello, good afternoon.
Yeah.
How are you? What's your name, sir?
My name is MC.
MC.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome to Under the Sun. What are your comments, views, or contributions?
The story is so interesting. It's so encouraging to see secondary students to produce such a creative idea. You know, the first one was the story of injustice, and at the end of the day, the justice come out, and it's so interesting. And the second one was also the being patient in anything you are trying to look for. Because at times there is a challenge between your breakthrough or what you're expecting. So, but if you go a wrong way or a shortcut, it may pain you at the end. Those two stories were so exciting to my me.
Okay, and the last one?
I can just remind me about it.
Okay, the last one was Days of the Black Sun, about the Rwanda. About the boy who lost both parents in the Rwanda genocide between the Tutsis and the Hutu.
Okay, okay. I didn't pay more attention. I'm driving on traffic. I didn't pay more attention.
Okay.
But I was listening.
Thank you for your honesty and your contribution.
Thank you so much. You're doing a great job.
Thank you very much, MC.
Yeah, God bless you.
God bless you too, my brother. Have a nice day.
And you too.
All right, I think we can call it a day. Thank you to God's Will, Anthony, and MC. And there we have it, ladies and gentlemen, the final in the series from Under the Sun, brought to you by the British Council and facilitated by Dr. Graham Mort from the UK. African Connect is coming right up at 3 p.m., but for now we've got bills to pay. It's still 92.3 Inspiration FM. The show goes on with Titi right here in your inspirational station.
Inspiration FM, Nigeria's number one family radio station.